You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
In the communication sector, there is a revolution taking place.
Look how far we've come. A third of the music released last year in this country was not even released on a CD.
Do you use a credit card online?
No, I live in Russia.
I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and the fiber to the node network.
Unless we can have clarity that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid.
You can't make it a technical game because the very people you're trying to protect are smarter than you.
We want to really change the world by making things so special, you've got to have it.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. At what point in your personal life do you find that you no longer control technology, but it controls you? I mean, when was the last time you did a technological census in your home? Why not stop and think for a moment about a few simple questions? How many remote controls do you have in the basket, on the coffee table, that do exactly the same thing? How many active SIM cards do you have for mobile communications in the family? What is the ratio of humans to computers in the household? What is your primary source of music in the household? Is it a CD? Or maybe it's a file server? And while on the subject of servers, how many do you have at your place? If the ratio of technology to humans in your household is greater than one, then chances are you're a victim of technology. So what can be done about it? And more importantly, do you want to do anything about it? Now, while we're on the subject of technology, how addicted are you to today's internet? Do you think you can go cold turkey and switch off all your gadgets without doing yourself, or someone else for that matter, some serious harm? Relax, because help is at hand. The team at netaddiction.com have put together a little survey to help you come to terms with your alleged problems. It's a 20-item questionnaire that measures mild, moderate, and severe levels of internet addiction. So if you've ever wondered if the internet is just something you can now no longer live without, or if someone near and dear to you is just beyond help, then do the test and know once and for all. Stay tuned and we'll tell you how.
This week on Tech Talk Radio,
Adam Turner takes a look at the latest confusion over Freeview, Google profits head south, we take a look at the changing face of Australian broadband, and Microsoft's Martin Gregory joins the panel to talk about a new initiative to get small business its own server. First up though, here's the latest happenings in the world of technology this week with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Pirate Bay operators are imprisoned and fined for illegal peer-to-peer file sharing. Where to now for Australia's NBN? Domino's employees are fired after pizza antics are posted on YouTube. And Ashton Kutcher beats CNN to the 1 millionth Twitter follower. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Operators of the popular peer-to-peer file-sharing site Pirate Bay have been convicted for breach of copyright and each sentenced to 1 year imprisonment and ordered to pay $4.5 million in fines. A Stockholm court found four young men guilty of making 33 specific files accessible for illegal sharing and guilty of assisting distribution of illegal content. The original charge of assisting copyright infringement was dropped after day two of the trial, which began in February. The $4.5 million fine must be paid to 17 different music and media companies, including Sony BMG, Universal, EMI, Warner, MGM, and 20th Century Fox. Mr. Thomas Dillon, Vice President of the Motion Picture Association, says that the verdict has been welcomed by the international film industry.
It's very significant. This was one of the leading piracy sites in the world, and it was distinctive in that it maintained a kind of public relations position that was about freedom on the internet and so forth. The reality was, as the court has found, that this was a commercial business and they were making money out of it, and the court has said it was illegal.
The young men found guilty last week are expected to appeal the convictions. One of the men found guilty, Mr. Peter Sund, described the decision on his website as bizarre.
It's serious to actually be found guilty and get jail time. That's really serious. And that's a bit weird. But it's so bizarre, and it's even more bizarre that we as a team were convicted to jail time. It's so bizarre, we just have to laugh about it. It's unreal.
Mr. Sund said they could not and would not be paying the fine. In a surprise announcement just prior to Easter, the federal government decided not to award the building of Australia's national broadband network to a private company. It scrapped its request for tender process and instead announced the formation of a majority government-owned company, the National Broadband Network Corporation, to construct the network. In a public-private partnership worth $43 billion over 8 years, Prime Minister Kevin Rudd said the government would now go ahead with plans to build a national fibre-to-the-home network, with the government providing the majority of the project's funds. The Prime Minister did say, however, that significant private sector shareholder funds were anticipated for the project, which would see initial speeds of up to 100 megabits per second delivered to 90% of all Australian homes. The decision came as a massive blow to Telstra, which has long enjoyed control of the country's public switched telephone network. Telstra was rejected from the tender process in December last year for failing to meet the requirements of the tender application, and analysts have suggested that the NBN itself could be delayed for 5 to 10 years if Telstra launches legal action to prevent access required to the PSTN to complete the network. The government, however, made it clear that it would be changing legislation to prevent Telstra from jeopardising the success of the NBN. Two employees of Domino's Pizza in North Carolina have been fired after posting videos of themselves fouling customers' food on the popular video sharing website YouTube. An online manhunt managed to track down the employees after they posted videos of themselves on YouTube inserting food and other items into various parts of their bodies during the food preparation process.
You see Michael over there hard at work. Did y'all see that? He just put a burger on those sandwiches.
In another video, the male employee, Michael, deliberately sneezes on a cheese pizza before packaging it for delivery to a customer.
Here's Michael.
Achoo!
Cutting somebody's cheese stick.
In a media release on the company website, a Domino's spokesperson thanked the internet community for alerting them to the employee's behaviour. The statement said that both employees had been dismissed immediately, that both employees had been arrested and that criminal charges were pending, and also that Domino's was considering civil action against the pair. The spokesperson also said that the store in question had been shut down and sanitised from top to bottom. The company was also re-examining its hiring practices. And after Oprah Winfrey made her Twitter debut last week, attracting more than 34,000 followers in just a few hours, Hollywood actor Ashton Kutcher surpassed US news juggernaut CNN as the first Twitterer to exceed 1 million followers. Kutcher, who is married to actress Demi Moore, and known for his roles in movies such as Dude, Where's My Car? And TV series That 70s Show, now has over 1.1 million followers and pipped CNN on Friday last week. Ironically, the CNN account wasn't started by the cable network. The CNN BRK account, with about 1,030,000 followers, was started by a man who retweeted breaking news stories. The account is now owned by CNN, and its creator, Mr. James Fox, has reportedly been hired by CNN to teach the cable network about Twitter and social media. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Internet traffic in Sweden has plummeted after a tough new anti-piracy law was enacted.
Switch on, come on.
Yeah, the SSD's got a lot going for it, really, hasn't it?
Below 100 US.
Absolutely.
It's cheaper than a netbook.
Maybe he's listening to a different Tech Talk Radio, I don't know, hey.
As long as it's used for goodness and not evil.
I'm interested in a new communications minister, but I'm worried that the one you have for sale is not fit for this purpose.
And he thought it smelt bad on the outside.
What's the story, Dr. Graham?
It's too small to be a proper PC, and it's too big to fit in your pocket.
Oh, that's harsh.
Well, that's what I thought when I first read about it.
You introduce your anti-piracy laws at the same time as your net filter, and that should equal out, shouldn't it?
We're a cynical bunch.
Tea timer? Sounds almost English.
That's funny.
Yeah. Good.
Had to be there. Had to be there, yeah.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. I don't know what these guys are doing in front of me here tonight, but there's a television studio being built. So if you want to watch, come along and have a look on ustream.tv. Dr. Ron, where do they go?
We go to ustream.tv/Tech Talk Radio AU and click on the link that says watch now or go to this show's page or whatever it says.
Oh, is that what you do?
Yeah, it'll tell you that we're broadcasting live.
I've got a spare laptop in tonight. I'm going to check it out because I don't normally get to see this sort of stuff. Hey, thank you very much for doing last week's show. Was it good?
It was a lot of fun, but it was very lonely in here.
Ah, Yeah, we had Easter off, didn't we? Except, yeah, well, you're on holidays. What can we say?
Always on holidays. I didn't even... the first time I got to push a button was at the 1 hour mark.
Did you?
Because the presenter from the previous program pressed play to start with.
Oh, okay. You had two discs, did you?
I had two discs.
Oh, okay. Were you taking calls?
Played it safe.
Did you get any requests?
I had some requests. They weren't on the telephone. I was on the chat. That was a bit of fun. It was the first time I was able to concentrate on the chat properly.
We're always on the chat.
Yeah.
Well, whether we read it or not, but in fact, I'll just tab over there now. But yeah, no, thank you very much for putting the show together. I had a lovely weekend off, and it was probably timely because I couldn't have come in anyway. I was so crooked, but that was life. Anyway, here we go, upward and onwards.
You were on your deathbed.
I was. And the really funny thing about it, because trust Tech Talk Radio to either go off air for a week and have a break, or the following Tuesday after the show goes to air live on Monday nights when all the big announcements were made, and that's when the broadband thingy all kicked in. We're going to talk a little bit about Australia's broadband, where to, where for out there from now on. So we'll have a bit of a listen to that afterwards. But in the meanwhile, we've got two other specialists in their field. We've got JD and we've got Graham in this evening. Evening, gentlemen.
Good evening, Andrew.
Good evening, Andrew. How are you?
Good. Yeah, good. It's all good. So we've got all the laptops lined up. We've got the cameras going. Apparently, we're on Ustream, all that
Not
sort of stuff.
Not quite there yet, but we will be soon.
Are we? Okay, we're still working on that problem. Okay, Dr. Ron, how's your week? Any gossip, any news, anything that you want to bring to the forefront now?
Lots of gossip and lots of news. The one time that we weren't all live in the studio, and we couldn't be because we'd made other plans. We planned to go away for Easter. K Rudd drops that bombshell the morning after our last live tech talk about broadband.
I'm sure he listens to us for that very reason.
And he thought, I'll fix them up.
Yeah.
Watch this, everybody.
Yeah,
fiber to the home.
Interesting, wasn't it? So, yes, instead of, we might as well talk about it now, I suppose. Instead of doing this great thing, which was going to be get some contractors in, do a deal with someone, chip in $4.3 billion, we've gone the whole hog. We've gone squillions and squillions of dollars now.
$43 billion over 8 years.
Yeah, yeah. Now, let's. I'm interested on everyone's opinion here, because let's put this into perspective, I guess. If you look at what we've currently got, we've got copper to our house, which is what we're doing our telephone calls on, and our broadband for those who are lucky enough to live relatively close to a telephone exchange. What Mr. Rudd is proposing is now to run glass to our house. As opposed to copper, we've moved away from that. We're going to get laser. We're going to get laser light shone up this bit of glass to our house. Now,
hurrah! At long last.
Technically speaking, that will future-proof the country for a long period to come, because you can put anything up a bit of glass. You know, all types of modulation, all types of things can be sent in both directions, whereas copper has always been a little bit linear, limiting, and also a little bit analog. We can now have true digital streams up glass.
I was talking on Ben May and Mike Beckham's podcast last week on The Ploy.
Oh, yes.
And they were asking me about some questions about the proposal. And I said to them that the copper wire that comes into your house at the moment, that fundamental piece of technology hasn't changed in 130 years. Until now. It's always been there, and it's always just been designed from the outset to carry one analog voice call. It's designed to have lots of volts pumped down it and to ring bells on the telephone at the other end when an incoming call is there. And that's all it's ever been designed to do. Now, with the wonders and marvels of modern technology, we've been able to push that a little bit. With making a standard dial-up telephone call, we can probably get close to about 56 kilobits per second in data. If we use some clever technology using out-of-band communication, which is like ADSL technologies, we can probably get close to 3 megabits per second, or 4 or 5 or 6 megabits per second.
20-ish if you're very lucky, if you live next door to the exchange.
If you live next door to the exchange and you're on ADSL 2+.
Now, before we go on, just to try and demystify what you just said then, Dr. Ron, we're talking about our voice frequencies operate anywhere between 0 and maybe 20 kilohertz, or that's the allocated bandwidth, or what a CD works on, for example.
That's what God allocated our ears to be using.
Okay, now, above our God-given hearing,
yes,
we have a lot of other frequencies that we can use, right up to, 6, 7, 8 megahertz, which our human ears can't hear.
Yep.
But yet, we can use those frequencies to send data. This is your internet, right?
Exactly.
And this is the reason why we have a line filter in our house, isn't it? Because some people with very good hearing can actually hear the funny noises that...
They hear the very high frequency noises.
Yeah.
And some devices are sensitive to it. It's not so much that people can hear that frequency, but it's the device isn't built to have that frequency present, so it doesn't ignore it like it should.
Okay.
The old-fashioned telephone device.
That's the important
fax machine or telephone or answering machine that you might have. Yeah.
Have you got a fax machine? I think I cancelled my fax line a couple of years back.
A lot of people still have them.
Yeah, well, move with the times, guys. But anyway, that's what that high-frequency filter does, gets rid of all that. Now, technically speaking, the further you are away from a telephone exchange, the high frequencies fall off a lot quicker. When I say fall off, you can't hear them anymore at the other end of the cable.
Yep.
Then the low frequencies does. That is the voice. And that's why in this country, with the tyranny of distance, if you live more than, you know 10K from an exchange, for example,
your effective speed gets less and
you
less.
You get less and less the further away you go.
That's correct. So what we've been able to do now is sort of use the existing technology in this way, but we've reached the limits. We've reached the limits of what a piece of copper wire can do.
We're up to pussy's bow.
We are. Now, with optic fibre, we still don't have a maximum amount of data that we can push through fibre. We're still finding, the boffins are still finding faster and faster and better ways of utilising optic fibre. And they're talking about, in the first instance, delivering 100 megabits per second down an optic fibre. Well, to each house. Well, optic fibre is capable of much, much, much more than that. Hundreds and thousands of times faster than
Absolutely.
That.
Absolutely.
Yes, 100 meg down an optic fibre is, it's like trying to fill up a glass of water with a tap dripping or something.
This gets back to the underlying issue of what Mr. Rudd or the Australian government is trying to do. Forget about prices, forget about global financial crisis, forget about all that for the time being. He's taking us from a copper age into a glass age, which should future-proof us for a long time to come. Now, the critics are coming out and saying, why not wireless? Why not wireless? Well, Graham will answer that in 1 second.
Sorry, I reacted instantly.
He did.
To your words. Yes, why not wireless? Do not use wireless as your primary delivery, because you talk about the limits of what frequencies you can push down a piece of wire, or the limits to how much data you can get down an optic fibre even. But when you're talking about radio frequencies in the air, in the open, it's a very limited resource, the number of frequencies you've got.
And it can be better used
for
mobile communications, not for fixed communications.
You got to use that resource for the things that you can't do by putting a physical connection in, whether it be fibre or cable or whatever else. And if you start using that as your primary delivery, on radio in areas where there's more than a couple of people, then you start to run out of available radio frequencies. The speeds drop. People get frustrated. Plus, it's not reliable. Data over radio has always got an error factor in it. Most packets get through, but one gets dropped. And that is just frustrating for users.
That's just the nature of radio, isn't it, Graham?
Yeah, radio just isn't a perfect, clean delivery. I mean, you all know when you listen to the radio, even when you listen to FM radio, you get the odd noise, the odd unexpected click.
I try driving in Melbourne with trams.
That's
oh,
right.
My goodness.
Oh, listening to AM radio in Melbourne, yes.
It's like internet over power lines.
That's right.
They banned that, didn't they?
Yeah, for good reason. So you've got to preserve that precious resource of radio spectrum for those things that need to be mobile, like our mobile phones, like our mobile broadband when we're out and about, a whole swag of other things that we need to have mobile.
An example that I gave to Mike and Ben on the ploy was that if you have a look at the current state-of-the-art mobile data network, have a look at Telstra's Next G offering. That's not going to give you 100 megabits per second guaranteed to 90% of houses in Australia. That's going to give you, 500-600 kilobits per second if you're lucky, maybe a meg if you're completely lucky.
Yep, as a reliable...
Data delivery system.
Yep, sure, it can peak higher than that, but as a reliable thing, it just can't do it.
That's right, and that's with the current technology that we have. That's with the state-of-the-art mobile broadband network that exists today. It's not the answer for everybody.
So glass is it. Glass is...
fibre, baby. Fibre all the way.
Absolutely. So I think Kay Rudd has done the right thing in taking the country, which is a fairly bold decision for a government which is a short-term prospect. Their prospects are to the next election. They've made a fairly bold commitment to Australia. And I think...
Yeah, this is a network that's going to be the network that we're going to use for decades into the future.
So speed is not the issue, as we've just said before, because glass can handle a hell of a lot more than what, or fibre optics can handle a hell of a lot more than what people are talking about. It's up to what and gets just, plugged in either end of that piece of fibre
exactly
optic.
Exactly right. Just like with the existing phone network, it was originally built just to carry a single voice channel and, you know, enough enough volts and current to ring an old mechanical bell and all that sort of stuff. Mm. But by changing the equipment on both ends but using the same bit of cable, it's easy to change equipment on both ends. To put new equipment in the telephone exchanges, new equipment in the home. It's the cable in between that's very expensive to run through the streets, under the streets.
So at what price? This is where some of the people who are not quite so keen on Mr. Rudd's idea for running fibre to the house or around the countryside, they're saying, oh, but this is going to cost too much money. This is going to really push us into a lot of debt. Well, maybe so, but let's face it, the cost of rolling out telecommunications to the whole country is not what you call a cheap exercise. No. And it really comes back down to what happened originally. That is, it was a government institution that laid the old PMG.
Yep, exactly. And imagine if they'd said, it's just too expensive to run telephone cables to everybody's home, which, it you know, that same argument applies then the same as it does now. It was an expensive exercise. It took a lot of physical man hours, which is an expensive thing to pay people to dig holes and run cable and all that sort of stuff.
Some of the analysts were saying that people might have to pay double what they're paying now for internet access. Well, if you're paying $20 a month at the moment for internet access and you have to pay $40 a month and you've got optic fibre to your house, you've got internet, you've got huge amounts of television, you've got telephony services, you've got services that we haven't even imagined yet.
And in the process, you build the network that is going to carry the country's digital output.
That's right. And you're future-proofing the infrastructure for the next 10, 15, 20, 30 years, then if it's going to cost you $40 a month instead of $20 a month, then, well, there's nothing to say that you have to use this network. If you're happy, if you don't want to pay more money and you're happy using ADSL on the phone lines, you can. If you're happy using satellite, you can. If you're happy using mobile broadband, you can keep doing that. But if you're prepared to pay the little bit extra, if it's going to be a little bit extra, for all of these extra services, I think it's money well spent.
Especially if it's run by a non-commercial organisation, such as the government, because you just feel a little bit better about it rather than lining some pocket of some chief executive's $24 million payout or something like that.
In a way, only a government can do
exactly
an investment on this scale. And, of course, the original rollout of all the copper wire was done by a government agency as well, Postmaster General's Department, as it was then, later became Telecom Australia and then Telstra, and then sold.
So, just a general consensus on a technological opinion only, K. Rudd has done the right thing here. What do you reckon, boys? Is this the initiative that the country needed to move into next generation of
communications? It's got a lot of the features of the best solution that we could have done. Did it surprise you, Graham? It surprised me hugely.
Did it surprise you for the better, or were you going, oh, no, well, that's a really good idea?
Yep. I was very pleasantly surprised. It was not something I was expecting anyone in this day and age would have the guts to do. It's a brave decision. It's a decision that looks forward to the future.
Dr. Rudd?
I agree. I think it's the way to go. With the technology that we have at the moment, a technology that is accessible, that's been proven to work, I think it's the right decision.
One of the things I like about fibre, it has very, well, unlike copper and the ADSL, it doesn't have the tyranny of distance issue. You can put a repeater in and it's not going to have too much issue down the track. So, JD, your thoughts on this? What was your initial reaction when you heard the news?
It sounds bold. I'm a cable user already, so I'm sort of fairly happy with what I've got at home. But I think in terms of rolling it out across the country and future-proofing us, I think it sounds like a great idea.
What speed cable do you
Eight.
Have?
Meg.
Okay. Are you with the incumbent?
Yes.
Okay. They're planning to roll out the DOCSIS 3 specification on their new cable, promising by Christmas in Melbourne to actually up it to 100 megabits per second. Do you reckon you'll use your allocation faster, or do you...
I'm using it pretty fast as it stands.
See, that's one of the issues with very fast broadband, isn't it? You can go through your allocation exceptionally quickly if you're not
careful. But that's one of the good things about this plan. This will drive not only the things that it does directly, providing broadband to homes, but it'll provide investment in backbone networks, in connections to other networks overseas. It'll drive a whole lot of other things to be able to back that up.
It's going to be good for everybody because of the aspect of introducing more competition in the marketplace.
Well, let's look at the incumbent. Let's look at Telstra, because all of a sudden, as of the other week when Mr. Rudd made this announcement, it put Telstra back in its pigeonhole. It sort of really, because when Telstra went to the table, they were saying, no, we're not going to put in our RFP bid because we want to be some form of guarantee of separation. Mm. The government then said, no, we're not going to give you any guarantee. We're not going to separate you. In hindsight, wonderful thing, one might go, well, I wonder if they'd planned this in the first place, although I somehow think they didn't. I think it just all fell into place for them. But now we have an incumbent who is entitled, like any other organisation, to invest up to 15% of the 49% of this company, which is, or this organisation, which is going to be commissioned to build this new network.
The National Broadband Network Corporation.
Is that what they're going to be called?
That's what it's going to be called.
So they can, Telstra can buy up to 15%, Optus can buy up to 15%, the Packers, whoever, whatever room you want to start, that organisation can buy up to 15% of it and chip the money into
it. Whichever way you look at it, improving the digital economy, as they call it, is going to be in Telstra's interest. It's going to be something they're going to be
absolutely
very keen to do.
And Telstra has gone awfully quiet of recent times, since A, that announcement, and C, and B, since Sol went overseas and was told, you don't have to come back in a great hurry.
It is going to be a big blow to Telstra because it's going to take away from them that monopoly that they have on the connections from the connections into people's homes.
Absolutely. And it's yes, exactly right. And now they're looking down the barrel
near monopoly, I should say.
Separation between retail and wholesale.
Yeah, which is also a good thing.
Which I think is a wonderful thing. And I think, they're about to do a lot of soul searching.
Have a question about this National Broadband Network, though, and I don't know whether anyone knows the answer. What's the limit that they're putting on how much of the country they're going to cover with this network? Where's the limit where they're going to say you're too remote to have this?
If your town is under 1,000 people of population, you don't get fibre.
Okay, all right.
And they've said 90% of all Australian homes.
So the balance will have to rely on wireless or traditional
or
technologies
ADSL
or satellite,
or
whatever they're using now.
Yeah, and I suppose as technology improves, they'll do it up to the 1,000 population, and then we'll get used to that. And the next round might take it to the next level and take it to from the ones between 1,000 and 500.
Absolutely, and there's also cause for other small businesses to get in there and cable up that 1,000 if
exactly.
they wanted to. So
yes.
I think the business models are there, and it's just opportunities awaiting people. So there you go. There's the wrap-up of what I think is the National Broadband Network as it stands. Technologically, it's a really good leap forward for the country. We're not talking financially. We're not talking about budget deficits and blowouts or politics in any way, shape or form. I think it is the beginning of where we needed to go as a country to move into a fibre optic world, which is not only for broadband, as Dr. Ron, you said before. It's for telephone. It's for television. It's for, you name it, whatever other services and features are going to be offered in time to come, we'll all be able to run them up this fibre coax with plenty of room, plenty of space.
And if a company comes up with a great idea, they can run it on the network. They can offer it on the network. They can say, here we are, this is our new service, whatever it is we're going to do.
Which is exactly the way it ought to work.
Yeah.
Yes.
Doesn't have to be internet access, doesn't have to be a television network, it can be anything.
Mm.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Full panel in this evening, Andrew McComb, JD, Dr. Ron, and Graham are in and webcamming away, I believe. What's the status of the webcam, boys? It's very serious over that side of the panel.
Oh, very, very serious.
It is very serious, isn't it? We're almost there.
Almost there. Yeah, good. Okay.
Should have it running by the end of the show.
Absolutely. That's what I like.
And time for the closer. Yep, we'll be there. Yes. Hello to everyone in the chat room as well. We've got at least a dozen people there. If you'd like to chat to us live while we're on air, you can go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Or if you'd like to send us an email, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
Yep, all there ready and waiting to take your calls. I'm going to just tab away for that for a second. The federal government looks to cash in on the mobile spectrum, as we were talking about radio spectrum before, Graham. The federal government has released a request for tenders seeking a valuation of its mobile spectrum assets in the lead up to the spectrum auctions. Are we having more spectrum auctions?
We're always having spectrum auctions.
I thought they would have auctioned it all off by now, but obviously not.
No.
The tender has asked for third party to assist the Department of Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy and Telecoms Regulator, ACMA, to put a dollar value on a 15-year spectrum license in the 800, 1.8, 2.1, 2.3, 3.4, 20 gig, 27 gig, 28 gig, 30 gig, and 31 gig bands. Well, there you go. That's wrapped it up now, hasn't it? That's everything?
That's everything.
That's it? We sold a lot? 15-year auction. Now, let's just put that into a bit of perspective. The lower frequencies around the 1 or 800 meg, 1.8, 2.1, 2.3, they're all good mobile broadband, mobile phone carrier type sort of things. But once again, they don't want to get too into creating new bands because then the manufacturers have to make new handsets, which take a value of all those sort of things.
You need some international parity as well.
You do, exactly.
There's no point in Nokia investing billions of dollars in developing a handset that works at 750 megahertz from the radio band here if it's not going to be used anywhere else.
The bottom end of that band starts to run into the top of the UHF television band.
It does.
Yep.
I just plucked that number off the top of my head. I don't know if that was a band or not. But
I'm just amazed that we're still selling Spectrum or auctioning Spectrum off to those who want to buy it.
Can I touch on something quickly, Andrew, which is relevant? Now, we had some correspondence this week from Lachlan, and Lachlan was asking questions about DAB in Australia.
Digital audio broadcasting,
which is digital audio broadcasting, digital radio.
Won't happen until the analog TV channels close down, my friend.
You've taken the words right out of my mouth. Lachlan, the issue with DAB in Australia is that it relies upon the radio frequencies which are currently in use by analog television.
2013 in the cities.
There you go.
The earliest.
So we'll be waiting until at least then in the cities to be listening to DAB. Now, in Australia, we've got something called, they're looking at something called DAB Plus, or DAB Plus, which is different to what they've been using in Europe and the UK, which is just the first generation DAB.
Yes.
The first generation DAB is a bit grungy, a bit low bit rates audio, and there's been a lot of people that have, like audio aficionados have been complaining over there saying a lot of programs sound a bit grungy and it could be better, but the DAB Plus will be a better codec, faster bit rates, and will sound nice.
Is that codec going to be used overseas in the future as well?
Yes, it is.
It's not going to be some peculiar thing that only Australia uses, because that would be such a stupidly poor idea.
Well, in America, would make a decision like that?
The Americans have three that they're running with, I believe, at the moment. Someone over there in the chat might be able to confirm that for me. But
Andrew, they have three
types of codecs that they use for digital audio broadcasting.
That would not surprise me, but that's the state of affairs at the moment, Lachlan. So looking at a couple of things, but the main thing in Australia is analog TV being switched off.
Warlock on our chat saying that the commercial radio is set to launch digital broadcasting in five capital cities. In May 2009.
They're pushing that at the moment. There's a lot of interest in mainstream media about DAB being turned on, digital radio being
turned
on.
There are some trial broadcasts going on at the moment too, aren't there?
Are there? I don't know.
I think there are.
And where can you buy radios is the other question too. If you want,
that's the difficult bit, actually.
It's like the first TV station to put up a TV signal. It was great, but no one could watch it because no one had televisions.
Yes. Technology is a wonderful thing.
We'll let you know if someone on the panel here gets one. We'll certainly be telling you all about it.
All right. Bottled domains. They've been caught, hung, drawn and quartered, really. I don't know whether you've heard about this, but their temporary injunction against AUDA, which is the Australian Namespace Registrar. And, well, apparently they revoked their accreditation because they did something naughty, and Bottled Domains has appealed that in the Supreme Court. So, have you guys got any domains registered with Bottled Domains?
No, I don't use Bottle as a...
I've seen them around for a while, but there's something strange going on there. I don't know too much about it.
What is it alleged that they've done wrong?
I'm not sure.
Are they one of these ones that send out invoices to people that aren't already their customers, or...?
No, someone out there might be able to confirm, but... I'm not sure what the allegations are in respect to why they've had their accreditation removed, but suffice to say that AUDA have obviously got something, some problem with them or not.
They did something, I haven't got the notes in front of me, but I remember reading they did something along the lines of personal information was released, customer information, sensitive customer information was released by, I think, a hacker got into their system, or might have been a disgruntled employee or something along those lines, and they had a lot of their customers, like credit card details and user account details, released into the wild. And they remedied the problem, and I think that's why they're disputing having their registration being revoked.
Try and find it a bit more for next week. So.
Yeah.
Poor old Google saw the first ever drop in revenue. Oh,
really?
The global financial crisis has hit the guys over there in Mountain View. Google has reported profits are still being made, but the sales are dropping in the recession. The company reported profits for the second quarter were up 8.9%. However, for the first time since Google went public, revenues fell down 3%. So they're making more money, so they're obviously doing things leaner and meaner and faster and better.
Is there a recession?
But, apparently so. Oh, yeah, Kev told us tonight there was.
Our Prime Minister used that word twice in the space of about 30 seconds, much to everybody's dismay.
Yes.
He said it will be unavoidable in this country.
Yes.
We'll be dragged into it. he said.
Wonder what other things they're trying to hide now. They're sort of, anyway, the spin is just amazing, isn't it? In other interesting news, which I thought was pretty good, Australian websites were nominated amongst the world's best.
Oh, good. That's
pretty good for Aussie web designers, because I think there's a lot of very talented Australians out there that build websites and design websites which are of a class that you won't find anywhere else in the world. But anyway, Australians made the website, Moshkam is amongst five nominees from around the globe, this Australian company, for the best music website. Redbubble is nominated for the best community site, and 12 Canoes for the best broadband site. So there's just two of the Webby Award, or three of the Webby Award contenders, which are up there. So go, guys. I think it's pretty good. You've done website stuff, Dr. Ron. It's not as straightforward as it seems to get something that works pretty schmicko, isn't it?
It's a horrible job. When I was young and naive and sweet and innocent, I used to think that it was a lot of fun, but I don't enjoy making websites anymore. You make websites for a living. You do it every day in, day out, don't you?
I do.
You must pull your hair out on a daily basis, trying to get compatibility with different browsers and...
Oh, don't mention the war.
Oh, exactly. This is the problem. This is what you're faced with.
Yeah, when people say, what are you going to make my website in? Well, we tend to traditionally go down to HTML back into the good old building blocks of the web so that it works on anything and everywhere. But since Internet Explorer 8 has come out, it's solved a lot of... Well, put it this way. I think it's solved more problems than it's created with the new browser. But having said that, you still have to build websites that work on 8, 7, and 6, a few flavors of Mozilla, Firefox... The odd Safari application, Safari does some strange things, a bit of Chrome, just throw another couple of browsers into the mix, and there you go. But it can be challenging. I think from a design and build point of view, they're a great challenge to get them up and running and working properly. Then when you hand them over to the customer, they can really ruin them for you in a matter of moments.
They can. What about small screen devices?
What about small screen devices?
Well, do you take them into consideration as well? Or do you have customers that come and say, the website looks great, but if I look at it on my iPhone... This bit's cut off here, there's a strange line across there.
There's a wonderful thing in the corporate world called budget. Now, when budgets are exceeded, certain things get thrown by the wayside. If you have a corporation which has a large budget and understands the webs and sees the necessity for small screen devices, then you will get an allocation to make a small screen website.
Mm.
For example, there's a couple that come to mind at the moment. One is m.abc.net.au. It's a website customized by the brilliant ABC web people.
Yep.
They have made a device where if you on your mobile go to that, you'll be able to see their website designed to be seen on a small, low bandwidth. So it's not pulling down mega pictures and all the graphics and flash animations and things like that. It's a website which is designed purely for your mobile device.
Yep.
That's excellent. The Commonwealth Bank is another organization of doing really well on the mobile devices. They've actually written their little apps so that it just displays beautifully. So all your balances and your transfers and all those functionality that you would see in their normal NetBank client, which is their internet service.
Yep.
Is reflected now in m.netbank.com.au. And you'll find that there's a lot of m. I don't know what's happened to Mobi.
No.
Everyone's deciding to go m. dot on their domain names.
Mobi was supposed to be the answer, but as you say, most people are going m. dot in the domain name for their mobile site, aren't they?
It is indeed. But in answer to your question, Dr. Ron, it's sort of two sites. You can't really run a desktop website and expect it to look half decent on a portable device. It just doesn't happen that way. You can sit there and scroll around them. Some mobile devices have a really good way of actually trying to shrink it all down to fit onto their little screens.
Mm.
But can you read it?
No.
You need about 10 magnifying glasses and things like that. So anyway, so well done for those Australian web designers that are actually getting out there and doing some stuff like that. Let's have a bit of a chat about Macs before we move on, because we've got a guest going to join us on the telephone very shortly. We have Microsoft is going to be chatting about the Small Business Server initiative that they've got very shortly. But in the meanwhile, Macintosh. A rash of malware for the Mac OS X system is now being used to run botnets, according to researchers. Now, this malware is coming through in not RigiDig OS X disk applications, the ones that come from countries that just like replicating because they can.
So Macs are getting sucked into botnets. What is going on, JD?
So the Pirate Bay wins one way or the other.
<It does. laughs> So is there much of this in Australia, JD, do you think?
To be honest, I haven't heard much about it in the Australian Mac scene. There's not really been a lot of discussion on the Mac Talk forums, which is an Australian web forum for Macintosh users. So, no, I don't think it's really reached us yet. All us licensed operators don't see it.
It's interesting, isn't it, that this is where Mac's heading at the moment, not because of who or what they are, but it's the fact that everyone is saying, oh, well, I think we might get my Mac copy and load it up on my clone or whatever it is that they're doing, and this is where they're getting stung with malware.
Well, that's right. There's the Hackintosh clan, but also I think Macs are becoming a bit more popular. The iPhone, the Apple TV all run on the same operating system. So if you write malware for one, you've actually pretty much done it for everything.
Cross-platform type sort of application. Well, this was first spotted in January, this Trojan, and had been bundled into copies of pirated Mac OS software. At the time of discovery, researchers noted that the malware payload included tools which could allow an attacker to remotely take control of an affected system. Now it appears that those components are being put to use. In a recent article, Symantec researchers reported that systems infected by the Trojan have been used at least for one denial of service attack, which is where you know, pick an organisation and just belt the living daylights out of them so that no one else can connect to their server.
At a certain day in a certain time, all your infected computers will start to try to access a site.
Yeah, so there you go. A Mac botnet built on OS dodgy OS software.
I remember at the time we talked about it, and because no one had accessed any of the malware, it was sort of a conspiracy theory that Apple might have actually put it in there to get rid of pirated versions on the internet.
Well, that's a good conspiracy theory.
Scurrilous accusation.
No, absolutely. Whoa. Allegedly.
That's
right. Oh, goodness. So, yes. All right, so Mac is no longer the free and easy, we don't need that stuff on our machine type sort of thing. We've now come to the level where you need to put some sort of protection on a Mac, JD?
I think you always had to. If you were a commercial operator, then I think you'd be silly not to do some form of virus and malware protection. But now that, because the OS X underpinnings, the BSD Unix, has a pretty strong security core anyway. So for home users, provided you don't download rubbish and torrents and so forth, you're reasonably safe. But if you're in commercial business, then you'd be mad not to spend some money on virus software.
Good advice. Let's turn our attention to the internet and to YouTube in particular, one of our favourite sites for going and looking at people singing on Britain's Got Talent. Yeah, we'll talk about that later on the show. But interestingly speaking, that YouTube has reached an agreement with Sony Pictures and other Hollywood studios to show full-length movies and television shows on the video web sharing site. Now, this is according to a leading blog, TechCrunch, and when I read this in the office, I had to read the fine print. I said, what's the catch?
Yep.
What is the catch?
There's got to be a catch.
I can't find one yet.
Oh.
It says free. The word free is in the press release, so I'm sort of thinking, how's this going to... Anyway, so we'll wait and see what happens. You'll be able to watch movies and TV shows on YouTube in high definition somehow free. Yeah. There goes the bandwidth. What do you reckon about that, Dr. Ron? It's not going to... I don't think it'd slow me down. I must admit, I like a good quality DVD or Blu-ray disc anytime over watching something online. But when the online for me is something I've missed on telly, where you want to go to iView or you want to do something like that and download something that you can't see in the video shop or something like that.
Well, if I've missed something on TV, I'd be looking at going to an online site, like the network site, like iView, for example. I don't think I'd be jumping on YouTube catch up on a missed episode.
That's maybe you will be now.
Maybe I will be. YouTube's the sort of thing you've got friends over and you think, well, what will I do for a bit of a laugh? Well, let's just put YouTube up on the telly and we'll search for different things and look at funny home videos.
Funny cats, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And dogs jumping into swimming pools and Lego Darth Vader's trying to water stuff in canteens and things, but not for catching up on... Haven't you seen that? Oh, gosh. I'll give you a link. Okay. Not for catching up on missed TV
shows.
No, it's
not a serious watching thing, is it?
No.
And obviously they're wanting to change that. That's interesting.
Now, from the Pigs Fly press release centre, how about this one, Dr. Ron? Heroes.
Yes.
TV program that
never watched it, but I know the one. Yep.
For the first time in Australia, Australians will be able to watch marquee US television shows on the internet legally and for free before it screens on TV. Did you hear that? Before it screens on TV as commercial networks brace for the impact of broadband on television viewing habits.
Ooh.
The Seven Network, which has lagged behind Channel 10 and 9 in putting full-length programs online because 9 have done it with Underbelly, 10 have done it with, I don't know, What have 10 done it with?
Stuff.
Something.
Something, yeah. Yeah, Australia's biggest loser or something. Who knows? Oh, you can probably try that on a mobile provider somewhere near you. Anyway, Channel 7 are having a go now, and they will make the season opener of the science fiction drama Heroes available on its Yahoo 7 website a week before the broadcast launch on April the 23rd. So for those who are desperate to go and watch that, you can go and download it and watch it free off Yahoo 7. Why?
With the embedded ads?
Good question.
I bet it is.
You reckon?
Mm.
Well, why not? It's a revenue stream for them, isn't it?
That's right.
So I wonder what the quality would be like. You'll have to, if anyone's a fan of Heroes out there, which personally I don't even know what it's about. I think I've seen a promo of someone like Superman standing on a rock or something. That could be wrong. Could be something else.
I think that's it. That's what it is.
Is it?
Yeah, lots of young superheroes doing stuff. I've never watched it. There's too much stuff to watch. Do you have that problem?
No,
there's lots of things you'd like to watch, but you just don't have time to watch it all.
I disagree with you, Dr. Ron.
You don't think...
I don't think there's enough... There's good quality
television
to watch.
There's too much garbage out there.
Absolutely.
There's a lot there that you wouldn't want to watch.
Yeah.
So I just turn on any commercial television channel on any sort of night of the week and you'll find more that you don't want to watch than you want to watch.
Yes. I'm not sure the internet's the solution to that problem.
No, it's not. But
I've seen a lot of things on the internet that I wish I hadn't seen.
We won't go into your private life now.
Don't tell us about your personal tragedies.
Exactly. But let's just face it. I think more money needs to be spent on production. And this is the problem we have here is that we've now got production companies which are screaming for money. There's no funding for movies, and let's not go down that track, but that's what happens. You get what you pay for, and that's why I like the BBC's model. They get their money. They get TV tax over there in the UK,
yeah,
and that funds production. That's why all their stuff's great.
TV licenses, didn't need a license to watch TV.
Yeah. Imagine if you have to pay to watch television in this country. Gee, that'd be a shock for some of the broadcasters here, wouldn't it? Why isn't anyone wanting to buy a license to watch telly? They've all gone to the internet instead. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. JD's here, Dr. Ron's here, Graham's here, and we're going to take a break. We're going to come back with a view from the couch. We're going to be talking a little bit more about free TV.
Oh, good. Adam will have something to say about that.
And have you heard of MHEG 5?
MHEG?
MPEG?
No.
MHEG?
MHEG 5.
Is that a group for kids or...?
It's like High Five, only it's a
speaking of High Five, have we seen the pictures? We won't go there. Oh,
no, let's.
I was just absolutely dashed when my 6-year-old was talking about High Five the other day. Anyway, no, it's not. MHEG 5 is not. And Adam, we'll talk all about that after the break. And we're also going to be talking to Martin from Microsoft. We're going to find out all the things about the new Server 2008 after this.
For listening.
Police called to control crowds at a technology fair in Singapore.
The sale of Apple TVs has gone up a third in the past year.
How frustrating.
Very.
Twitter came to life like you wouldn't believe.
What next, I say?
Around about $10 billion from the NBN.
Well, that's a bit unusual, isn't it? I'm not sure what to make of that.
Those people who found themselves hacked turned into porn stars very quickly.
Entertaining.
Oh, look, Dr. Ron, I haven't seen you like that before.
Informative.
My old phone is at like 32 by 32 pixels.
Independent.
Well, that's impressive.
I smoke.
That's right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Don't breathe this.
Do you Twitter?
We do.
Why not follow us? For the Tech Talk Radio Twitter feed, follow TTR2008 or visit techtalkradio.com.au to see what all the presenters are currently tweeting. There seems to be a little bit of confusion about digital audio broadcasting in this country. We'll try and clear that up. We know the people to speak to. We might try and get them on the studio in the next few weeks.
That'd be really good.
I'm actually doing some stuff with ABC Radio on Wednesday, so I'll be in the right place at the right time to ask. So, yeah, stay tuned. We'll find someone who'd like to come and talk to all that sort of stuff. So, anyway. Now, MHEG 5, it's a wonderful new format, which I'd never heard of up until recently, but do you know what it is?
No.
Okay, there are several standards for interactive digital television, and MHEG 5 is one of them. The key word there is interactive. It's been developed by the Multimedia and Hypermedia Experts Group, hence the name MHEG. The raw MHEG 5 specification is called an ISO thingamabob, and you can purchase the spec, which means you can then have, obviously, rights to use it down the track. Now, where is it used? It's used in the UK predominantly, EMHEG 5 is currently used for the UK's Freeview service.
Oh, right, there you go.
Awfully familiar, isn't it? They've done a few versions and a few changes on it, but basically it means that you can then interact with them, and they've put their specification up online for other countries to take down.
Now, that's interesting because, you know, people probably won't know unless they're Mac enthusiasts, but Apple were involved back in the 90s in a network TV trial where it built lots of little set-top boxes which streamed EgPink 2 and were interactive. So you had a remote control and you could tell the TV which view you wanted and...
Well, that's what MHEG 5 sort of does. It lets you interact with that sort of which stream you want to look at. And MHEG 5 can even change channels for you and do things like that.
So the makings of this has been around for a little while. And the problem back in the 90s was the bandwidth wasn't available to do it efficiently. So you needed really big pipes and it cost too much. But these days...
Yeah, a couple of other countries that are looking at MHEG 5 are New Zealand and Hong Kong. So, but MPEG 4, MPEG, the Motion Picture Experts Group, MPEG 4 is traditionally what people are trying to pump down to us at the moment, which is a really good quality, non-interactive type sort of thing. It's just a stream that comes to us from the big TV transmitters in digital format. So that's a bit of an explanation about MPEG 5, what that is. Now, Adam Turner, our writer extraordinaire, contributor to Tech Talk Radio, has tried to do a little bit of work and find out what's going on in the free TV land in this country, because you remember the shenanigans with free TV trying to do their own electronic program guides, and you might have seen the new television ads that are on at the moment with the federal government doing all sorts of funny things, you know, a little red dot that goes around and says, I'm digital ready and all that sort of stuff.
Adam was very cynical, saying that Freeview is not actually new content, it's just a duplication of what's currently on the old analog channels.
That's pretty much it.
On digital.
It's a new label stuck on the same bucket of something.
Yeah. Yeah, well, anyway, let's not us tell us all about it. Here's Adam's view from the couch for this week. Hear all about what free TV have got to say about MPEG 5.
With all the hype around the Freeview campaign, I was disturbed to discover around half of the Freeview-branded digital television equipment to go on sale in May could be obsolete by Christmas, yet such equipment will remain on sale for 3 years. Many devices carrying the Freeview logo will not be compatible with upcoming Freeview services, such as a standardized on-screen electronic program guide. Such advanced features may be launched by the end of the year, but manufacturers will not be required to indicate whether their Freeview branded equipment is compatible with these advanced Freeview features. Delays by the Freeview Consortium in deciding on the standards for its advanced features mean that of the 10 manufacturers named as developing Freeview compatible equipment, at least 4 will be selling devices that do not support the new features. Several other manufacturers are still unsure as to whether their devices will be compatible. These so-called Phase 1 Freeview devices, which go on sale May 1, are not required to include MPEG 5, a technology on which Freeview hopes to build its advanced features. It's possible such Phase 1 devices will not be upgradable to support the new Freeview features, yet manufacturers are allowed to sell devices without MPEG 5 for another 3 years. Some other devices on the shelves will support MPEG 5, but there'll be nothing on the box to tell you which is and isn't compatible with all the Freeview services. It will be up to retailers to explain the difference to customers, according to Freeview. Now, MPEG 5 should not be confused with MPEG 4, which is an upcoming broadcast format which Australia may eventually embrace. All Freeview branded equipment must be MPEG 4 compatible, but it doesn't have to be MPEG 5 compatible until Phase 2. Now, I don't really blame manufacturers for not introducing MPEG 5 up front, considering that some claim Freeview hasn't given them enough time to introduce it. To make matters worse, Freeview's chief executive Robin Park says she's only 90% sure that MPEG 5 is the technology that will be used to support the advanced features. The problem is that Freeview is still negotiating a license to use MPEG 5, negotiations which are obviously complicated by the fact that Freeview has already told everyone it intends to use MPEG 5. So much for keeping a poker face at the negotiating table. The whole MPEG 5 situation is a mess and typical of Freeview's strategy of making grand statements before consulting the industry. It doesn't bode well for the early adopters.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
So clear as mud now?
Clear as mud.
MHEG 5, you now know what it is. You now know how it works.
Oh, I'm an expert now.
And you just said just before when we came on here, you bought yourself a new tuner, an LG thing.
That was a new PVR, which I got today.
A personal video recorder.
Yeah.
What was the buying criteria for this? The
buying criteria for this was just needed a digital tuner, and it needed a fairly sizable sort of hard disk. And yeah, that was about all, I guess. And I wanted one with an Ethernet port in it, but something that's another pet hate of mine and also Adam Turner's. So, and we've ranted and raved about that before, but unfortunately, no, I didn't have an Ethernet port. However, we were able to find something that satisfied our requirements. So, in terms of, you know, you have PVR, JD, do you? You have an Apple TV, which does that function in your digital living room.
That's right, and everything's stored on my Apple X-Serve at the back of the house,
and
then streamed from one end of the house to the other using 802.11g.
Very nice, which is the fairly common wireless standard. Well, I don't have a PVR at home. The one that I purchased was actually for to be installed for somebody, which we got installed and working, but I still am persevering with an actual PC doing the media centre function in my house. I'm not using a PVR.
And I've got to say, what I do for recording, though, is I record on my Power Mac using one of the Elgato TV tuner cards, sticks, and then I encode it, get rid of the ads, do all of that sort of stuff, save it out onto the server, and then stream it from the back end. So it's reasonably intensive, but at least the products haven't got ads and they're reasonably small file formats. And
do you find that you can edit the program, you can edit the ads out of the programs prior to watching them and still watch the programs afresh without knowing what's coming up next? Or can you jump if you
scroll through really quickly?
Scroll through really quickly. Absolutely. Don't look at the program. Don't look at the program. Put your blinkers on.
The other dirty little secret is where ABC watches. So in fact, there's not a lot of ads to cut out of those. It's just get rid of the ABC ads at the beginning and the end, and you're done.
Now you got to watch them because that tells you what's coming up next that you want to watch.
That's right.
Yeah. So, all right. Yeah, PVR is a great thing. I'm in the market for one at the moment. Single tuner / HDMI is probably about my requirements because the tellies of today have HD receivers built into them. It's like the old VHS days, really, where you just need one these days. But
Brad in our chat room says the Foxtel IQ2 is a good device.
Oh, yeah? I haven't heard much about that.
I've got friends that have got the IQ,
IQ2.
They love it. They rave about it.
I wonder what I've never really gone down that path, so I'm not 100% sure what they offer in respect to all those sort of things. So,
the one thing I was impressed with today with this new LG model is the record feature is very, very fast. So if you're watching the TV and you think, I need to record this program or I need to record this new segment or whatever it is, I want to watch it later, pick up the remote control, hit record, bang, record up on the screen.
It's recording.
It's right into hard disk straight away. There's no, there's no lag or no 5 or 6 or 10 second delay. It's just recording, which is very good.
Excellent. All right. I must admit, the one I use has a USB external drive on it. So I just plug a USB drive in, and that's terrific because you can record on anything like a key.
Yes.
A memory stick or into a portable hard drive or something like that. So, and of course, the other great thing is once you do that, you can just unplug the drive and plug it into a PC and just lift off the track that you've just recorded. Very handy.
We need more with Ethernet ports.
Yeah, that'd be good. A set-top box with a PVR and an Ethernet port. What a good idea.
It's a pet hate. One of the top-end ones, it's either the BeyondWiz or the Topfield model, has wireless networking built in.
Yeah.
But as we were talking about before, radio for data is not always the answer. If we could have a 100 meg Ethernet port in the back, that'd be great.
And the other thing, too, is a lot of people use these 2.5 gig video sendery things. You know, you get those file servers like D-Link, I think, sell one.
Yeah, not a fan.
Well, the problem with them is they can obliterate a whole neighbourhood in one foul swoop because they're just so broad when it comes to transmitting on radio frequencies. Anyone with a cordless phone / wireless router / anything else within QE of them just gets obliterated.
And then the next door neighbours want to nuke their dinner in the microwave and you can't watch TV for 3 minutes.
Go wireless in these days.
That is one of the problems with my setup, actually. The microwave's between the server and the TV in the lounge room.
So whenever someone warms something up, you're offline.
The kids come in at tea time. What's happened to the telly?
Have you closed the door on your microwave when you've got it running? Do you do that?
Do you have to do that?
Yes.
Oh, dear, I'm going to try that.
Deary me. All right. Back with hopefully Martin just after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
We're
We've now got the technology. It's time to get silly with it.
Are people still using Internet Explorer?
That would be a shame.
Do you reckon it'll take up? I reckon the youth of today will love it.
Like a Dr. Evil's boardroom.
Yeah, it does change the way the browser behaves.
Oh, I'm excited.
Don't worry about Kaspersky. Get into your local road sign.
Yeah.
I like a fresh install, me personally, but nonetheless.
Entertaining.
I was in until you said maggots.
Informative.
How do you decide who to follow?
Independent.
Oh, aren't they the biggest crock?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
No.
Greetings, everyone. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, Australia's one-way technology radio show.
That you are. Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, and JD here.
Present.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it? Hey, servers, Windows 2008, all those sort of great things. Are you familiar with them, Graham? Do you build servers? And Dr. Ron, you build servers?
I build servers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they easy? Do they scare off clients and go, oh, I don't really want to know about
yes.
it?
There's a reason why people pay us to build servers for
that's
them.
That's exactly right, yeah. You've got to know what you're doing. If you do know what you're doing, you can do great things with...
All right. Well, would it surprise you that Microsoft have now released the Foundation 2008 server range, and we're going to find out a little bit about that. On the line from Microsoft up in Sydney is Martin Gregory. Martin, tell us a little bit about the Foundation. What are you trying to do here in small business and with the new server?
Hi, Andrew. How are you? Small business in Australia is an incredible category of companies. You know, in that same area of small business, you may have a legal firm employing 20 people with a turnover of several million. But at the other end of the scale, you've got an awful lot of businesses in Australia that are one or two people and today use things like a PC or a USB stick as a server. And, almost 4 million people are employed in small businesses. So it's a really important area to get right. So Windows Server Foundation really is your first server. It's absolutely an entry-level server. So it doesn't come like the small business server package. It doesn't come with email and SharePoint and database. It really is a basic server to enable you to share files and printers. And, we think that there's an awful lot of small businesses in Australia that could take advantage of that.
Now, you're targeting or a price point underneath that, which makes it quite attractive to small business. So for print and file sharing, which, as you say, is probably a fairly major part of what an organisation would do, what would they expect, I guess, for their money? And how much are they expecting to pay? And where would they get something like this? This obviously, is it a special deal or is it just something which is now going to become part of the Microsoft range?
Well, absolutely, it fits in the Microsoft range. So, right up the very high end, whether it's a copy of Windows Server data center that's running a bank or a government, this is right down at the other end. And the way that small businesses will be able to get hold of this is on a new server. So it will be through the key OEMs. And as you say quite rightly, it enables small businesses to buy a server at around the $1,000 mark, which is really important. Obviously, it'll depend on what kind of server and what spec of hardware and which OEM you choose. But the idea is really to provide a very low price point for people to be able to get things like file sharing, print sharing, and securely sharing documents.
So one of the biggest issues, I guess, will be who's going to run it in the office. Is it going to be hard? Do they need an IT guru to come in and set it up for them? Or is it something which is... maybe come second nature to I guess probably not, I don't know how to try to put it, but someone who's not as switched on as the guys that come around and install the big servers.
Yeah, look, that's a really good point. And, I've been at Microsoft for a long time and, one of the key differences around Microsoft is a view of how we work with partners. Partners are absolutely essential to our business, but what we often find when we talk to small businesses is that if they don't have the capability themselves, they do have a trusted advisor or a local guy around the corner that they can ask. So the way that I would think about this is, you can take it out of the box and you can do the setup yourself, or if you've got a trusted advisor or a partner company to help you with the setup, then that's absolutely fine too.
So what about expansion down the track? You've got your foundation server in, and it's all going great guns. What are the opportunities to migrate to, say, small business server and start running mail, like Exchange servers on this box as well?
Yeah, look, that's a good question. And in terms of moving up the chain, you could move up to a standard version of Windows Server 2008, which is, again, is just the server operating system and the file and print sharing. Or you could move for one of the custom packages, so the one that you mentioned there, a small business server. So, you know, if you want, if a small business, you know, perhaps a family business, you know, who's using an ISP-hosted email that, you know, expands and wants to run their own email server, then absolutely small business server would be a good fit. You know, the way to think about this possibly is, you know, if you're running your small business with either a hosted ISP email address or something like a Hotmail address, then Windows Server Foundation would be a you know, a potentially good fit if you're using a PC as a server today, than to start to look at a server technology.
And there is an upgrade path so that your usernames and passwords and things that you've set up on your Foundation server will move into your small business server when you upgrade?
You can certainly do that up to the Windows Server Standard Edition, and I'm pretty sure you can do that to small business server as well, yes. But, you know, we need to make sure that as businesses grow, they can move up the chain. In terms of size, the Foundation server is capped at a hard limit of 15 connections. So, you know, we're talking about very small businesses, so 15 should be plenty. But really beyond that, then, you know, probably you could take advantage of something like a small business server.
Yeah, that makes sense. But 15 connections, that's counting things like handheld devices that might connect to pick up their, you know, to connect to the web or whatever. Not just 15 users, but 15 devices on the network, is that right?
Yeah, that's 15 connections. So, yes, any kind of connection that is into the server. And really that, you know, why 15? You know, well, it really is because we're thinking about the very small size of business. And as I say, getting that first server. So, you know, in conversations with some small businesses, you know, it's been called everything from flower shop server to hairdresser server. But, you know, really, I think about a lot of those businesses that are operated from home. And almost something like 70% of small businesses run from home today. So, you know, we talked about the range of what a small business could be, but it really is at that kind of a smaller end of small business.
That's a really big area. I agree. I work with customers just like that, so there's certainly people in that situation. What's the key difference, though? You say that it does file and print, and you know set up your passwords and stuff on it. These are things that, you know, if that's all we want, that's what we bought. You know, Server 2003 or Server 2008 for. What's the difference between this and Server 2008?
Well, really, it is about that. So it's on the same code base. It's on the same Windows Server 2008 code base. But, you know, it's designed for that small business. So, for example, it wouldn't have things like the virtualization technology, which is much more of a, you know, once you're running multiple servers. So it doesn't have things like that. You know, technically, the code base is the same. So it can do things like join a domain. If you want to have a Foundation server, do that. But really, you know, we zero in on the kind of customer that this is built for. It is that's lower end of the smaller end of the small business.
Okay. So it would join a domain, but it wouldn't run a domain, for example, like a Server 2008 would.
Exactly. No, it wouldn't. But it does have the ability to join one if that were okay.
And the other question I've got is it does it have a backup solution built into it so that people can back up their data?
It doesn't have, well, the OEMs obviously have got to do their own separate backup technology. There is a backup wizard to help people back up files, but it doesn't come with package tape drives and all those kind of good things. So that's a great question that a small business should ask when they buy the server about, hey, how can you help me keep my data safe and back it up securely?
But it does have something like, you know, Windows, you know, the old NT backup.exe that can actually do it if you connect something to backup to.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
Martin, you mentioned in a few sentences back that this was the hairdresser, I think you called it.
the flower
shop. This to me seems to be like a perfect server for a home environment. In this day and age where, you know, you've got, I guess, mum and dad and the kids at home you know, studying and all wanting their own personal laptops and devices to connect to do their homework and things like that.
But still wanting somewhere to put family photos that everybody can see and that sort of stuff.
And also in this day of cyber bullying and things like that, you could probably, I don't know, can you put this device into a home environment to sort of control internet access and things like that in a family level?
Yeah, absolutely, you could do. We've had a product which is a home server, which I'm sure you've heard of before, which again is a is an OEM-only version, but that's designed to actually look a bit more like a piece of consumer electronics. So it looks a little bit nicer. It's very small, and you completely configure and run that home server through a web browser interface, so you never actually have to see the box. This is really a designed at that kind of small business. So it would come on something that looks like a server rather than a piece of consumer electronics. And it really is that kind of stripped down, lean, and the My First Server role.
All right. So it sounds like it's definitely a good option for, I guess, a business which has been, a little bit hesitant about getting into server technology for more so the fear factor, I guess, of how are we going to do this, because we are only the flower shop, the hairdresser, the small business on the corner who doesn't understand computers. This seems to be the way in for them. So should they be, you mentioned about having the person who you could rely on to ring up and make a phone call, but if someone didn't have that, with what comes with the server, would they be in a position to get it running to be able to turn the box on and maybe hook two clients, a laptop and a desktop, to it? Would they be able to do that relatively easily?
Yeah, you'd need a little bit of background knowledge, so you'd need to know. If you can set up things like wireless routers and stereo equipment, and you're reasonably tech savvy, yeah, you could absolutely have a go at doing that. It does require a little bit of technical knowledge, but there are wizards and manuals if folks want to read. But Andrew, you know what? When I talk to small businesses, quite often what I hear is, hey, I'm an accountant, or I'm a baker, or leave me to do what I'm good at. And a lot of them do have that kind of trusted advisor. But if I think about some of the incentives around technology purchases that the government are offering right now, now could be a good time. But if I think about what these businesses do in Australia, the small businesses we're talking about are responsible for about 30% of the economic activity in Australia. So they're really, really important businesses. And I think, you mentioned the fear factor up front. If someone's been using a Windows XP, PC essentially in that file sharing role, I think that feels a lot more familiar. But really, I think, once people go down the server route, there's no looking back, because the technology is better, it is more secure, and it just gives you that better environment.
Hey Martin, it's Ron here. Can you give us a quick rundown as to what's included with the new 2008 Foundation? I take it we've got mail services, we've got a web server of some sort.
No, you don't.
You don't?
No, it's file sharing,
yeah.
And I'm sure you can correct me, it's file sharing basically only, and I think internet, is that right?
Martin?
That's right, yeah. The way to think about it is it's the core server OS technology. So, absolutely, if you wanted, mail, SharePoint, database functionality, absolutely the product that you'd be going for is something like a small business server. This is really a very lightweight, stripped down first server technology.
Okay, yep, got that clear in my mind. So
it gives you somewhere to save your files, a way to hook up a central office printer, and that's really its main goal.
And share files and get security in a central place, and to back up your data and those sorts of things.
So, Martin, is it available now? Where does someone get one of these if they want to go down this path or investigate? Obviously, there'd be something on the website about it, but are they available now?
Yep, it's out in the next, actually out in the next couple of weeks. So the best thing that somebody could do would be to go to their OEM of choice, so whether that be HP or Dell or whoever it is, and it would be about buying a server with Windows Server Foundation installed on it.
Or their channel partner, their local trusted computer advisor.
Yeah, and for folks who've got that would be a great place to start, yeah.
Martin, thank you very much for spending a little bit of time. It's a bit clearer now, I think, where it sits in the whole scheme of Microsoft products. So hopefully, if someone's out there interested in starting that up, maybe it's a good first step for them down the track.
Well, we're really excited about it. As I say, it's a critical part of the market and the economy in Australia. And the feedback that we've had so far is that, it is that right version just for a first server. So we're really excited about it.
And it'll breed a bit of excitement in it. People realise, we can do this and we can do that, and then it'll just grow from there, I reckon.
Yeah, great. Let's hope so.
All right, thank you very much. That was Martin Gregory from Microsoft talking about the new offering that they have, which is Windows Server 2008 Foundation, coming to an OEM near you. We'll be back with more after this.
You're listening listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
Internet Explorer 8 officially came out of beta during the course of the week.
Images depicting a man vomiting outside a London pub were removed from the site.
Give it a try if you haven't.
I got stuck by our own spam filter.
Yeah, it's good like that. It works well.
There is nothing that would surprise me with what kids do online.
With many years in experience.
Entertaining.
You're an idiot. It's only three words.
Informative.
These new hard drives are all solid state.
Independent.
They need constant poking.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Tricky thing, the English language.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here, Dr. Ron, JD, and Graham. We're in talking technology this evening. Another interesting piece of technology that I've found absolutely, I guess, it doesn't surprise me, but social networking has really come to its own, I think, in the last little bit, not only with Twitter and Facebooks and things like that, but YouTube managed to come into the news this week with the wonderful woman in England. Have you seen that? Who did her thing on Britain's Got Talent or something like that? She managed to get up on stage and sort of do some amazing things in front of a lot of sceptical believers, I guess. And when I first saw the clip on YouTube, thought, oh my goodness.
I came across this because somebody tweeted it to me. So
I don't know how you came across
it. I got it the same way. Probably the same Twitter.
Yes. Thanks, Lyd.
Oh, yeah. Well, did you come from Lyd? Oh, I didn't see that one. Anyway, I was in the office and I think someone sent me a thing. Quick, look at this, look at this. That's the way it came across my
desk.
And
I passed it on to my wife and she passed it on to her mum. And yeah.
Isn't it the way? That's amazing.
That's the way it works these days, yeah.
Now, in next to no time, it's had, 3 million hits on YouTube in a day or whatever it was.
Yeah, if technology works in the studio tonight, I'll just play a little bit of it here. This is off YouTube and you can hear a little bit about this woman.
All right, what's your name, darling?
My name is Susan Boyle.
Okay, Susan, where are you from?
I am from Blackburn near Bathgate, West Lothian.
It's a big town.
It's a sort of collection of... It's a collection of...
Yeah, so that was Susan Boyer. And she basically got up stage and she sang something from... Was it
Les Mis, Laura?
Les Mis,
yeah, this is a 47-year-old sort of housewifey-looking person.
Housewifey, that's a good way of putting it, isn't it?
Except that she's never been married or kissed.
Oh, well, there you go.
That's part of the story.
And never had any formal music training, from what I understand.
No, she didn't. But anyway, she's been picked up on YouTube. I think this evening, I think last time I counted, it was up to something like 20 million hits. That's nearly every single person in Australia that's had a look at it, really, when you put it into perspective like that, don't you think?
It's a lot of hits.
It is.
A lot of views.
Amazing amount of traffic for one sort of site, I guess. Anyway, she's doing I think she's on Larry King and all the American chat shows are now trying to pick her up. But don't you think that's where we're at now these days? That type of communications that we had, like you were saying before, JD, your wife sent it to you and Lyd tweeted it and a few other people like that. Isn't that how things get around these days? It's not. We don't rely on news services or anything
telephones
like, or telephones or anymore. It's just this social networking thing.
One thing that people are doing now as well with social networking is that they're watching trending topics and they're watching hot topics that everybody's talking about. And they're doing this by selectively filtering the public timelines or watching the public timelines that go past. Twitter's just introduced this fairly recently in the last few months on the right-hand side of the normal Twitter screen.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also applications like or websites like Twitter Fall and WeFollow.com where you can actually see what other people find interesting and what is current at any given point in time.
It is. Twitter Fall, I think you put me onto that. That was a pretty amazing sort of thing where you can choose those little, I guess, pearls that you're looking for.
You can select what trend or what topic or what keywords you want to monitor in the public timeline. And you can also see what is popular in the public timeline as well.
Mm-hmm.
And TweetDeck lets you do that as well. There's an add-in.
TweetDeck's a program that you can install, which will let you do that too, JD. That's right.
But does it surprise you that this is where we're at these days with this type of communication, with Twitter and with social networking, how quickly it spreads around the world?
That's why they call it viral. It spreads like a virus, doesn't it?
It is. It was like, I don't know when it went to air in the UK, but it was out here fairly quickly and everyone was onto it.
Lyd had tweeted it and I'd watched it within 2 days of the show going to air.
Yeah, no, it's pretty amazing sort of stuff. Just for those of you who didn't hear it, this is just a bit of what it actually sounded like.
Yeah.
This is a track from Les Mis. Now, you've got to imagine this woman. She's not what you expect to see of a woman of this type of voice. But anyway, have a bit of a listen to this.
I dreamed a dream in time gone by. When folks my life
was you didn't expect that, did you? Did you? No.
And as I just said, you didn't expect that, did you? So pretty amazing.
And I think the really interesting thing, just from my point of view, is that obviously the producers and the stage crew had seen the rehearsal. So they knew exactly what was going to happen. And if you watch the YouTube, it's got behind-the-scenes bits, and clearly the presenters knew exactly how the audience was going to react.
Oh, really? I haven't seen
you,
that bit.
And you hear that comment from them behind the scenes saying, you didn't expect that, but we did.
Anyway, so that's Susan Boyer's rise to fame.
Susan Boyle.
Boyer. Boyle, isn't
Boyle, yeah. Warlock's actually posted a link on the chat room to the... There's a wiki. So Susan
already?
Boyle Wiki
already? Link, yeah. Well, there you go.
B-O-Y-L-E. You can look it up on Wikipedia.
And even on YouTube, the comments on that first page, you know, that people would go out and buy her album straight away if she had one. You know, she's ready to go.
Oh, I think so. It's amazing when that happens, these talent that you least expect. You've shocked me, JD. I'm sorry. What you're saying about that they already expected that. Is it rigged? Does Red Simons know what's going to come out?
The stage crew will have been there for the dress rehearsal.
Yeah, it's not rigged so much, but the people that are putting the show together know who is going to be coming on. But not necessarily the audience don't know, and the panelists don't know.
But I don't think the judges knew. I think it was a shock for them. I hope it is. But
they certainly reacted as if it was quite a shock to them.
Absolutely.
It's well worth watching their reactions.
Now, on the other side of the coin with social media, there's the bad side of it. Well, when I say bad, there's no bad side to social media, is there? It depends on which way you look at things. Telstra initially the other day had a... Remember the fake Stephen Conroy that came out, who was a Telstra employee?
Who is no longer a Telstra employee.
Anyway, Telstra have just today released the social media engagement policy, which I have here in the studio, which is a 6-page document. Where's a camera? There's so many cameras. Any camera?
Hold it up somewhere. A camera will pick it up.
Anyway, there's a lovely 6-page document here on Telstra. Now, to try and curb the... And it's not only Telstra that's doing it. I think the ANZ are also doing it, some of the larger organisations. They've got to try and maintain some form of credibility for their brand on these social networking sites like Twitter. So they've actually decided to...
acceptable use policy or something.
Yeah, pretty much. They've basically said, we can turn it off unless you can prove that you know what you're doing on there, and then maybe then we'll actually let you use a social networking site for company things.
Now, this is a difficult issue and it's not just companies like Telstra and large companies. This is a difficult issue for every company to be able to deal with information in this way, where information flows so quickly. Like we were saying, this video, the information about it went around the world very, very quickly. But you don't want some sensitive piece of information, some bit of inside knowledge about your company, even if you're a small company, getting out through someone saying something, even just carelessly, even just accidentally on I'm going to such and such a place for the weekend with work. Might be sensitive company information in some fields.
A company is also not going to want its employees, if they're making personal blog posts or personal tweets or Facebook status updates, whatever they're doing, they may not want people to think that that is a comment that's being made on behalf of the company. If the person's an employee...
That's exactly right.
And they're being employed at that particular moment in time to do a task, and they think, Andrew McCollum, who works for Telstra, oh, he's just said that on Twitter. That's an interesting comment for a Telstra employee to make. So they have to obviously define what is acceptable and what is not acceptable in their workplace.
And this is a very fine balancing act that companies have got to do, because if you're not careful, and this is where Telstra are going to almost certainly have an issue, they're going to go too far the other way. Because, I mean, we did see a study not long ago that said that people that use social networking, that use the internet for, you know, leisure browsing at work, are actually more productive employees.
Wilbing. Internet leisure browsing.
Let me paint a picture here. Little Johnny Rotten's working for a company who not overly enjoying his employment there and gets hauled across the coals for whatever reason and decides that he's going to go down. He says, I don't want to work here anymore. I'm going to leave, and I'm going to make them remember me. And they jump on Twitter, and they do all sorts of nasty things. Now, don't you think that's something that an organisation would like to prevent?
Absolutely, yes.
because that's...
And it's something an organisation should have things in place to prevent.
But that can happen now.
It can, but not in the knee-jerk reaction in the workspace, in the workplace. You could, at least it's the train ride or the bus ride or the car ride home where you go and drown your sorrows and think about it, and then...
Yeah, before you ring the reporter at the age, yeah.
That's the one, rather than going back to your desk and going, I've just been fired, what am I going to do, and let fly with a barrage of anti-whoever-you-work-for type sort now, of
But this is where companies have to think things through. If you are going to fire an employee who's in this sort of position, you need
Disconnect
to make the decision.
First.
Yeah.
You don't want to let them go back to your desk, is that what you're saying?
Word up. Well, that's right. Word up your IT department. Or get your IT consultant in to make sure they're either online or in the office at that time. Take the person into the manager's office. While they're in the manager's office, you revoke their password so they don't go back onto the company network after they know they've been fired. You know,
is this what you do for a living? That's a really good idea. Is that how you advise people to say, this is how you should... Oh, okay.
You've got to do it. And 99 times out of 100 employees are not going to be malicious about it, but you've got to protect yourself against that one.
Yes. What about Facebook? What about those things as well? Like, there's got to be a line in the sand where you want to say, okay, from here, from work, no Facebook, no Twitter, no this, no that. It's going to make work
and if
a
you
very
do
dull,
that,
grumpy
you,
place
yeah,
and
you make
untrusted.
You make your workers feel that, yes, they're the management thinks the employees are the enemy, and that's not a good environment. So you want to allow them to do that sort of stuff, but you need to have a company policy in place to say, look, you can use Facebook, we're giving you this privilege, but you've got to limit yourself. You've got to not talk about company things on the Facebook page, that sort of stuff. And you get them to sign a contract that's legally enforceable. You've got to go to your lawyer as well as your IT consultant.
A small business, they're going, oh, just turn it off, it's got to be easier.
Yeah, and that's the worry. But, you know, there comes a point where you've got to deal with these issues.
One of the great things about running
you're already getting a legal contract written up to employ somebody anyway. You've just got to make sure you put in... some
the
protection
exit strategy
for yourself.
Up front.
Yeah, that's right. And the policies to say, look, you're allowed to use the internet from work, but you're not allowed to do certain things.
I built a web page in at work one day on our little intranet, and I just had a thing like, stop wilfing, go back to work as a web page. then I said, okay, I jumped into my DNS server on my Windows box at work, and I pointed www.youtube.com to my own little web server.
You're evil. You are evil.
Yeah.
That would have frightened the bejesus out of some poor person.
It did. It worked really well.
All I wanted to do was eat their sandwich and listen to Susan Boyle at lunchtime, and they've got an Andrew McComb go back to work message on their web browser.
Yes.
Crikey.
Oh, dear. It certainly got the message home. It was good. I turned it off after that.
Was it accepted in the vein in which it was intended?
Oh, it was.
That's all right.
I'm still working on peer-to-peer file sharing, though. I've got to get the bandwidth down. Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron JD, and Graham Callaghan in this evening. Now, just briefly before we go to the break, Pirate Bay.
Pirate Bay.
Pirate Bay. The pirate ship.
ThePirateBay.org
you mentioned
is
it,
the address.
You mentioned it in the news there, Dr. Ron.
You want to be careful saying names like that. You'll be Kevin Rudd blacklisted. You'll be behind the Great Wall of Australia.
We'll have ban notices posted.
That's right. Never work. Yes. Never work. The ship will sink. And the Pirate Bay boys, four of them, were found guilty, as Dr. Ron alleged in the news. Well, actually, he didn't allege. It was fact.
Reported.
They were reported. They were found guilty. Anyway, they're going to spend 12 months behind bars. Now they'll have to cough up with about $1 million Australian each. A bit over $1 million.
No, it was $4 million.
Yeah, but that's all up.
Yeah, each.
But they've got
each, beg your pardon.
But about $1 million each.
Yep.
And one of the guys was reported, I'm going to burn everything I own before I go paying these people these money that are due.
And they can clean up the ashes or something like
that. What's going on? Is this a trend? Is this the beginning of a precedent that is going to be set worldwide about peer-to-peer file sharing and BitTorrent?
It's part of an ongoing pendulum act of, draconian crackdowns and liberalisation of the way governments treat this stuff. It's just another part of the ongoing cycle.
The boys were reported in the media as saying that it's just like a Hollywood film. It's just like in the beginning of the film, the heroes get squashed and, screwed into the ground and oppressed and all that. But they rise. It's like the phoenix rising from the ashes. They will come back and they will be victorious at the end of the day. Sounds like something from a Second World War film, if I recall. But, I don't
know who they're trying to convince
themselves.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But I must admit, if it was me and someone wanted $1 million for something I'd done, I'd be going, okay, you win. I'll be working. I'll be in debt for the rest of my life. I'll go, yeah. But is this seriously, is this going to put a dent in this?
No, it'll just move it to a different jurisdiction.
That's it, isn't it? It'll just go to Nigeria.
Or
somewhere like that where the laws are even flakier. And then the poor old, that country will find themselves being severed from the rest of the world because the record companies or the movie houses want to do that. Yet on the other hand, they're saying, Sony's saying, yeah, have our stuff, put it up on YouTube.
Yeah,
it's a funny world we live
in. They
want
to maintain control, though, over what is released and what people view.
So they'd rather do it legally, give it to the masses legally, they'd rather have control than illegally and not have control.
With digital rights management on it, yeah.
And probably embedded advertising for Sony BMG or
And in Sony's case, installing rootkits on your machine without asking.
That too.
Oh, now that was the
CD.
Oh,
they only did that once. Yeah, sorry, Sony.
Yeah, and they thought...
Once is enough.
They thought they'd get away with that one. What was it? There was a CD that came out originally.
And you stick it in your computer and it rootkits your machine and makes it open and accessible for anyone to remotely log into it.
Like Sony.
Yeah, to like check Sony, out what else you're running on your machine.
But by accident, they actually made it open to everybody.
By accident.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, I remember that. That was about 2 or 3 years back, wasn't it? Maybe they're trying to think, don't mention the war.
We haven't forgotten.
No.
Sony.
We won't forget that one for a long while.
All right, time for a break. Fingers crossed, we'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Did you know that whenever Tech Talk Radio is live to air, you can chat with the panel in real time? It's marvellous, this internet thingy. So wherever you are, anywhere in the world, you can be a part of Australia's premier technology show. You don't even have to register. Just log on to chat.techtalkradio.com.au and add your voice to the growing number of interactive Tech Talk listeners. It's a great way to ask a question to a guest or to the panel. Come on, join the fun. chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Did you know that Opera's now on Twitter too? She's just making the debut as well. Everyone's getting in on the act.
We'll talk about that in the gadget website Oddspot section, but yes, she is.
Let's talk about technology and remote controls, as I alluded to in the opening, just briefly before we go to what you were just talking about there, Dr. Ron. How many remote controls have you got at home, and how many remote controls do the same thing? Do you have volume wars in your living room?
No, we don't have volume wars. I think that we're a bit special. We only have 2 remote controls in our living room.
Well, that's pretty normal.
Yeah, one for the DVD / surround sound system and one for the television.
I've got remote controls that have actually, for devices that have found their way out to the hard rubbish collection a couple of whiles back.
And you're still harbouring the remote control.
I just know that, there's fresh batteries in there if I need it.
So remote control is battery storage. Is that what you're advocating?
Yeah, absolutely. Good. It gives the kids something to play with too at the time. They don't. Yeah, but anyway.
Graham and I were having a discussion a few weeks ago about what our human to computer ratio was in our house.
Ah, yes.
Now
you're greater than one. I'm greater than one. I plead guilty.
Now this has got special rules because I've got like about 300 of them in my house.
Yeah, but what's normally turned on and functional as opposed to what's in your museum at the front?
Right.
Yeah.
I'll have to think about that.
Well, I had a 4-to-1 computer to human ratio in our house,
four computers to every human.
Yeah, and we've got 2 people, so we've got usually 8 computers, no less than 8 running at any one time.
Oh.
But that's just computers. And then someone said just before the show, what about PDAs and things? Are we counting PDAs and things?
Set-top boxes,
smartphones, set-top boxes. JD, then I'd be going 5-to-1 easily.
Gee, I'm nowhere near that. I'd be 3-to-1, I reckon.
3-to-1?
Yeah.
Well, that's still pretty good because...
Hang on, I've got more humans than you have.
You've got more humans.
No. Sorry, I was thinking of 2 adult humans there. I'd say 2-to-1, maybe. 2-to-1. 1.5-to-1 even, kids.
You could help your ratio, Dr. Ron, by counting residents rather than humans and include Tess.
I thought you were going to say procreate.
Could help your problem, Dr. Ron, by procreating and increasing the number of humans in your house. No,
wouldn't dare suggest that.
That's all right. You just did, though. Now, we do have a puppy dog. So,
yeah, that's right.
Inhabitants.
Yes, that's right.
Inhabitants, yeah.
Yes. Well, we've got a netbook computer each, which is normally on. Which we have on when we're watching the telly and we instant message each other. Can you make me a cup of tea?
Oh, no.
It's your turn. It's your turn. And we've got the media centre. We've got 2 servers that are always on. We've got a PC each. So probably, that would be 4-to-1. But then if you count the phones, it'd be 5-to-1.
How many SIM cards do you have, active SIM cards amongst the family?
I think I've only got 2 and Lainey's only got 1. So probably just 3.
Well, that's not bad. That's not bad. We're about the same. Oh, we're at three.
Does it include...
No, we got four, actually.
Does that include...
Mobile
your,
broadband.
Yeah, I was going to say the broadband.
No, you've got to include your mobile broadband.
Well, that'd be three for me and one for Jen.
So you've got four.
Well, I've got work ones, you see.
Work ones.
Yeah. Well, I've got...
Graham's
still
fingers.
Counting. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I've... Yeah, I'm something like 2-1 or 3-1 on SIM cards in our house. Yeah. That's not good, is it?
Anyway, if
I don't know. I think it's really good.
If you think you're addicted or you know someone who may be addicted, go and answer some of these questions at www.netaddiction.com/resources/internet_addiction_test.
Or you can just go to netaddiction.com and click on the internet addiction test link.
That's an even better way of doing it. Or go to our website and there's a click your link.
Oh, there you go. That's the best way of all.
Go and have a
doing it now. I'm doing the test now. I'm hitting a lot of offens, I have to say.
Oh, well, just go and report back to us after. We'll have a break and we'll find out when we come back with Oddspot Gadget and Website of the Week.
Suffering Succotash. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Let's face it, Telstra has a huge PR problem.
It's called the Integrated Public Number Database.
Hopefully that's not what they're talking about.
No. Do you block them, do you?
I do.
Yeah, this is what happened, yeah.
This is what happened.
Yeah.
Look at that.
Yep.
Good use of technology.
Adam, you're too far gone to be saved now.
Entertaining.
How can you work in IT and not drink coffee?
Informative.
Boffin' your techie propeller head, Vicky.
Independent.
So SMS is not an on-time delivery system.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And if you get Inga from Sweden showing her wares.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. This thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Last week we were talking on the chat while I was running the radio station via remote control about big red buttons.
Oh yeah, I saw this in the chat. What's going on here?
Now, this is a fantastic gadget. This is called the USB panic button. It's a big red button that looks like something that would launch a nuclear missile.
I need one of those for tonight.
Something that... You do. You definitely do. Hey, have you ever had someone walk up behind you and you're on your computer or start walking towards you and you think, crikey, I've got to get rid of whatever it is I'm looking at really, really, really fast. And you start fumbling around with your mouse and your keyboard. And the more you fumble, the worse it gets.
It's called the Alt-Tab key, isn't it?
Well...
I mean, normally you're watching programs that you shouldn't be watching.
Well, this USB panic button, all you do is you flick up the plastic lid, you slam your hand down fast on the big red button.
Yeah.
And it does a pre-programmed function. It can bring up an image, bring up a spreadsheet. It can just completely change what's on your screen very, very quickly.
Blue screen of death.
Can, oh, there we go. Bang, big blue screen of death. There you go. So that's available online, the USB panic button. But what a fantastic idea.
For Mac and PC?
Mac and PC.
Oh, good,
it's USB all the way. So you go to firebox.com for more information about the USB panic button. That's our gadget of the week.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
We hinted at this earlier in the program, we mentioned it at least, wefollow.com, that's wefollow.com. This is a website which is touted as a user-powered Twitter directory. Now, why I thought this was good to talk about is if you aren't yet involved with Twitter, the Twitter community, and you're thinking about it, you think you'd like to, but you're not sure how to approach it, you're not sure who to follow if your friends aren't there. You can go to wefollow.com and it tells you who the top people are, who the interesting people are to follow. You can search by tags and different categories. So if you're interested in politics or you're interested in sports or social media or celebrities, you can go to each one of those tags. You can see who's popular or who you might be interested in following, and you get some more information about them there on that directory. So that's easy, wefollow.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Beware of evacuation drills. I thought this was a sensational abuse of technology and something that we were hinting at earlier with Graham and things that he's involved with professionally. A fire alarm rings for what is believed to be an evacuation drill. All the staff from an unnamed Singapore company gather outside waiting for the building to be emptied and the drill to be completed and the sirens to stop. 5 minutes go past, 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes. Then finally a security guard appears and reads out the following. Dear employees, with sincere regret, I've been asked to announce that many of you will be your last evacuation drill. Due to the global economic downturn, the company is laying off almost 50% of its employees. When my announcement finishes, if all of you please move back into the building in an orderly manner, if you swipe your card and it doesn't work, that means you've been laid off, in which case you'll not be allowed inside or your belongings will be couriered to you by tomorrow. The company has used this innovative approach so we don't fill up the email inboxes with layoff emails and goodbyes and lots of... We avoid any unpleasantries inside the office.
That's very good, Dr. Ron.
Thank you for your rewarding career with us. All the best and good luck with your projects.
Please. Is this an Australian company that's initiated this device?
Singapore.
Oh, really?
Yes. Don't know if it's true or not, but why let the truth stand in the way of a good story?
Oh, absolutely.
What a great abuse of technology. Set off a fire alarm and dismiss half your employees.
It's a bit like going down to the newsagent to check your lottery ticket. Do I get into the job or not?
That's it. That's what it is. Yes. So, beware if that fire alarm goes off.
Be for one of those RFID loops as you try and get back into the office. Oh, here we go. I'll put my card through. Do I win or do I lose? There you go. Great way. Good idea for employers wanting to lay staff off and all that sort of stuff.
That's the Tech Talk odd spot, Andrew.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio?
We've done that addiction test. I've got to have a good hard look at myself, it says.
All right. Well, we'll do a bit more of that next week when we return. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron JD, and Graham Culligan in for this evening. We'll be back same time on this station next week. So until then, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.